Hi, my name's Paul Baines. I'm Professor of Political Marketing at the University of Leicester and co-author of Marketing, 5th edition by Oxford University Press, with Chris Phil, Sarah Rosengren and Paolo Antonetti. This is the podcast for Chapter 8 on New Proposition Development and Innovation. In this chapter, we explain the different levels of a proposition. In other words, what does a proposition encompass? We identify and describe the various types of physical proposition and explain particular concepts relating to the management of products, including the very famous concept, the product life cycle. We also explain the relationship between products and service offerings and describe the product-service spectrum. And we explore the processes and issues associated with new proposition development and developing and innovating new propositions. And we describe how propositions are adopted in particular markets. Let's begin then by looking at the different levels of a proposition. We can think about a proposition encompassing three different levels. That's the core proposition, an embodied proposition, an augmented proposition. With the core proposition, that's the actual benefit or service that it bestows. So, for example, a car provides the core proposition of movement from A to B, mobility, transportation. Cameras make memories. They record memories and allow us to retain memories, if you like. The embodied proposition surrounds the core proposition. That consists of the physical good or the delivered service that provides expected benefit. So it might be the features and capabilities, the durability, the design, the packaging and the brand name. Cars are supplied with different styles, engine seats, colours, boot space and so on. Digital cameras offered with a variety of pixels, zoom and telephoto features and so on. The final aspect of a proposition is really the augmented proposition. That consists of the embodied offering plus core proposition, plus all those other factors that are necessary to support the purchase and any post-purchase activities, such as credit and finance, training, delivery, installation, guarantees, and the overall perception of customer service. Moving on then. So we can classify physical propositions into different types. From the consumer goods side of things, we can talk about staple products, impulse products and emergency products. Staple products are available anywhere. They include groceries, cereals, petrol and that sort of thing. So for example, groceries could be bread, milk, soft drinks, breakfast cereals. And they're bought frequently and habitually. With impulse products, these are offerings that consumers may not plan to buy, but are persuaded to pick up, particularly when they see point-of-sale advertising materials for them, for example. Chewing gum, chocolate bars, pasties, magazines are all typical impulse purchases. Emergency products. Well, these are bought when absolutely necessary, and these products represent a solution to buyers who are hence less intent on obtaining the right quality or image-related offering. So examples would be buying a bandage if you've cut yourself preparing some food or something. Finding a locksmith when your house key stops working or you lose it. You know, that kind of thing. With business products, we can really see these in slightly different ways. There are different types of business products. There are capital equipment goods, buildings, heavy plant, factory equipment, accessory equipment goods, which support the key operational process and activities of the organisation, so photocopiers, computers, stationery, office furniture, that sort of thing. Maintenance, repair and operating goods are those products other than raw materials that are necessary to ensure the organisation continues to function. So this might be nuts and bolts, light bulbs, cleaning supplies, that sort of thing. And so understanding the nature of the different types of products in both the business field and the consumer field is quite important, because that helps us understand what kinds of decisions we need to make about the types of products that we develop. There are three concepts that are important here. And that's the product range, the product line and the product mix. So just to quickly define some product terms in relation to Samsung, a product item is a distinct single product within a single line. So Galaxy's S8 Plus would be an example. A product line, a group of closely related products, so all three Galaxy S8 phones would be a product line. A product mix would be the total number of product lines offered by an organisation. At Samsung, this would mean everything that they offer: mobile phones, televisions, print solutions, domestic appliances, cameras, etc. Product line length is the number of products available in a product line. So we've talked about three products available within the Samsung Galaxy S8 range. Those three are S8 Plus, S8 and Dual SIM. Product line depth is the number of variations available within a product line. So for example, in the UK, the five trim colours that are available for the Samsung Galaxy S8 Plus. Those five trim colours are Midnight, Black, Orchid Grey, Coral Blue, Arctic Silver and Rose Pink. And product mix width, and that's the number of product lines within a product mix. So those are key elements. Whenever we release a new product, we might be interested in that product's life cycle. Usually a product would go through various phases. Before it's released, it goes through the development phase. Typically, you would lose money at that point because you're spending money to develop it. Then you would introduce it to the market and you'd start to make a little bit of money but lose a bit more because you're having to promote it. Sales would then begin to grow and you go through a growth phase. At some point, it reaches the maturity phase where people have decided they don't need this product anymore, they've bought sufficient quantities, and it then goes through a decline in sales. Profits start to dip at this point, having reached a height, and that's a maturity phase. And then you go through a decline phase where sales drop off, and of course profits drop off at the same time. Now, the product life cycle is quite a useful concept in understanding how a product moves through different phases. But some people think that the life cycle is a difficult concept because at any one time, how do you measure where your sales are? There's no blueprint for where your sales will necessarily move. We know it looks like we know it's a curve. It rises. It starts from zero, rises up, reaches a horizontal line, and then dips. But at what point? Where is that particular curve at any one time? If we look at sales, say a year after it's released, how do we work out whether that product is in the introduction or growth phase, or whether it's even hit the maturity phase? Because different products have different lengths of time, different life cycles. And there are different types of product life cycle. That's the other problem. So if you revive a product, then it may not decline fully. It may start to increase again. A good example would be vinyl records are now massively dropped off in the 80s as CDs came in, late 80s, I guess, with CDs. And certainly by the 90s, mid-90s, CD sales were massively overtaking vinyl. Vinyl dropped off. But now in the 2000s, we're seeing a resurgence in vinyl sales. Some people think that vinyl is actually a better quality, the sounds that it makes, which are part of the recording process, sound more like a proper studio feel. And the result is that vinyl sales have actually started going up. And interestingly enough, CD sales, of course, are dropping substantially because of streaming and so on. So, also, you can see rapid obsolescence, which is where the sales grow, they start to grow and move up as they're growing. Then they hit the maturity stage and level off. But then instead of leveling off slowly and coming down, they fall off a cliff and just hit bottom axis immediately. And instead of leveling off, they come to zero sales in a very short period of time. In other words, and that's kind of rapid obsolescence situation. So in that particular scenario, if that happens, then that would illustrate your product has become obsolete. And what you would have to do really is divest your product in that market and develop something new. And rapid obsolescence occurs usually when another product's come along that just meets customers' needs better. The example that we just went through is relevant here, and that's the example of vinyl records at the point at which CDs were introduced. And the point at which streaming was introduced is the point at which, of course, CD sales started to drop off. Okay, so developing new propositions, we tend to think of a six-stage process for new product development. First of all, there's idea generation, where we come up with new ideas for products. We might, say, generate 100 ideas. We would then screen those ideas to see which of those were really viable. Perhaps we'd use customers to have a quick look at those, reduce it down to maybe 60 or 50. Probably less, actually, probably more like 25 after screening. We then develop business plans and market analysis for those. In that phase, maybe we reduce it further because we can see that the market's not big enough for these products or services, so we reduce it down to, let's say, after 25, that it goes down to more like 5. And then at product development and selection phase, maybe we take 2 through test marketing. And after test marketing, maybe we only end up with 1 that actually goes through to commercialization. So those are the 6 phases that we would tend to go through in developing new products. Now, that's physical products. The service development process is similar in many ways, but sometimes we see with services, sometimes services undergo beta testing, where a version of the service is made available to customers and any imperfections are identified and removed before the final version of the service is launched. Sometimes that's called a soft launch. And that's quite useful because you can then co-create the service with customers to improve it further. And, you know, beta testing was undertaken by music streaming companies such as Google with Google Music Key, and apparently even with Apple Music for Android. Okay, so that's the process of new product development, but how does that relate to how customers actually adopt the new products? And that's interesting because in persuading people to, in getting people, customers to adopt products, you've first of all got to build up their knowledge that a new product exists and that that new product is better than existing products to give them the reason to buy it. So there's a persuasion process. Once they've been persuaded, of course, they buy it. They use that product or service and then they determine whether it met their needs or not. It kind of goes around in a circle. And each of those elements, stages, is impacted by various things, various factors. So the process of adoption, of course, is a sequential process, if you like. And around the 60s, a chap called Everett Rogers came up with the idea of the diffusion process, that actually any innovation is adopted to different degrees by different groups of people. And so sometimes a product is adopted quickly, sometimes it takes a longer period of time. So the adoption of dishwashers in Spain took much longer, for example, than the adoption of washing machines. Perhaps because dishwashers are less fundamental, whereas washing machines are really quite... If you didn't have a washing machine, the process of washing is very, very time-consuming. If you don't have a dishwasher, the process is a bit time-consuming, but, you know, maybe you'll save yourself half an hour, whereas with washing, you would save... Washing clothes, you would save yourself hours, 3 or 4 hours. So, diffusion theory really says that when we buy... When products are released onto the market, that 5 groups of people buy at different points. So as soon as something is immediately released, there's a group of people called innovators, about 2.5% of the buying population. These percentages of population seem remarkably similar across different types of products. So it's really that is very similar across different product types. So innovators, about 2.5% of the population, very often young people, well-educated, confident, financially strong, they're more likely to take risks. And they buy something the moment it's out. So they even know about the product before it's released, and they're often persuading other people to buy it too. That's the innovator group. So that's the group of people that are queuing up for the new Xbox, whatever, you know, whatever version it is. Or they buy the new mobile phone the moment it comes out. There's then another group called early adopters, which it is about 13.5% of the market, characterised by a high percentage of opinion leaders. So these people are persuading others to buy. These people are very important for speeding up the adoption process. Consequently, marketing communications need to be targeted at this group of people, really. Then there's the early majority. That's about 34% of the market, much more risk-averse but than the previous two groups. But these individuals require reassurance that the offering actually works and has been proved. They're above average in terms of age, education, social status and income. You then have the late majority, a similar size to the previous group. They're sceptical of new ideas and they tend to, partly because of the social and economic factors that exist in this group, they read fewer publications and they're below average in terms of education, social status and income. And then you have the final group, laggards, about 16% of the population. They're suspicious of all new ideas, opinions change very little. They tend to have the lowest income, social status and education of all groups and take a long time to adopt an innovation, if they ever adopt it at all. So that explains the diffusion process. What it means is whenever you launch a product onto the market, then that you have to identify who these people are. You certainly have to identify the innovators, because each of those groups persuades the others to buy in a kind of sequential process, if you like. And that's very, very important in socializing people into using your products. Okay, that's new proposition development and innovation. Thanks very much for listening.